From VOA, Press Conference USA, here is your host, Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. Joining me on the program is VOA TV senior analyst Jeffrey Young. As we honor World Press Freedom Day on May 3rd, we speak to the president of one of the foremost organizations that monitors, protects, and advocates for press freedom around the globe. Michael J. Abramowitz is president of Freedom House, an independent watchdog organization dedicated to the expansion of freedom and democracy around the world. Founded in 1941, Freedom House was the first American organization to champion the advancement of freedom globally. According to its website, Freedom House advocates for U.S. leadership and collaboration with like-minded democratic governments to oppose dictators and oppression in a vigorous manner. It amplifies the voices of those struggling for freedom in repressive societies and counters authoritarian efforts to weaken international scrutiny of their regimes. Freedom House also empowers human rights defenders and civic activists on the front lines and to advance democratic change. Before assuming his post as president of Freedom House in February 2017, Michael Abramowitz was director of the U.S. Holocaust Memorial Museum's Levine Institute for Holocaust Education. He led the museum's genocide prevention efforts and later oversaw its public education programs. Previously, he was national editor and then White House correspondent for the Washington Post newspaper. Michael is a member of the Council on Foreign Relations and former fellow at the German Marshall Fund and Hoover Institution. We'll talk with Michael Abramowitz about continued threats to press freedom globally and how the coronavirus pandemic has exacerbated that trend in both democracies and authoritarian regimes alike. So in keeping with social distancing measures in the age of the coronavirus pandemic, we are coming to you via Skype, and Michael Abramowitz joins us via Skype. Welcome to the program.
It's great to be here.
And I'd like to welcome my colleague Jeffrey Young, also via Skype. Well, Michael Abramowitz, let's first talk about the coronavirus pandemic and any effect it is having on press freedom, which has already been in retreat as both autocracies and even some fledgling and established democracies use the pandemic to either play it down or censor information or even crack down on civil liberties in the name of combating the pandemic.
Well, I think certainly the pandemic is exacerbating some very concerning trends that we've seen at Freedom House with regard to press freedom in particular and more generally pressures on democratic freedoms more broadly. For the last 10 to 15 years, we've seen and documented at Freedom House a steady decline in press freedom. And I think it's fair to say that the coronavirus is going to exacerbate those trends, hopefully just for a short period of time, but it's definitely putting pressure on core tenets of press freedom. I'll start by saying a flip side, though, that you are seeing through the incredible reporting of the free press in many different countries, including our own, the exposure of really terrible governmental incompetence in responding to the crisis. To the extent that governments are actually trying to improve their performance with respect to the virus is often in response to exposés by the free press. So we have to remind ourselves that the press is playing a very important role in helping hold governments to account in doing a reasonable job in responding to the pandemic. That said, you do see around the world examples of different governments using the pandemic kind of as cover to crack down on traditional press freedom. You know, we all expect that in a crisis, particularly a health crisis that we're dealing with now, that there'll be some restrictions on freedoms in, you know, in the name of public health, things that perhaps free societies would not accept during normal times. But people understand, you know, lockdowns and so forth are necessary to cope with a pandemic. But you're seeing governments go too far. And like one particular example is you see governments using the pandemic to actually crack down on press critics that are raising concerns about the governmental performance. Exhibit A there is what's happened in China, which has cracked down on the bloggers and others who have highlighted the problems of China's response to the pandemic.
Let me just quickly ask you before I turn to my colleague, Jeffrey, about the decline in global freedom. This is now the 14th consecutive year of decline in global freedom, as Freedom House reports, which is very unfortunate. It's a terrible trend. What are some of the key regions where press freedom has been backsliding and why?
Well, as you say, we track not just press freedom, but many of the core freedoms that we think are essential to free societies, whether it's freedom of assembly, freedom of expression, freedom of religion, rule of law, the conduct of free and fair elections. And what we've seen at Freedom House is that over the last 14 years, every year there have been more countries that have suffered declines in basically core civil liberties, core political rights than those that had improvements. And we had that again in 2019. This is happening all over the world. It's happening in every continent. It's happening both in traditionally authoritarian regimes. Think of countries like China, Russia, but it's also happening in countries that, you know, we've thought of until relatively recently as thriving democracies. An example there would be Hungary. And with respect to press freedom in particular, you have the same trends going on, that each year over the last 10 years or so, there has been a decline in the press freedom scores that we track at Freedom House. And this is happening both in authoritarian settings. So again, think China, but it's also happening again in traditional democratic countries. You know, a very good example of that would be Hungary, which is the first country in the EU that, according to Freedom House scores, has been labeled partly free. We group countries into three categories: free, partly free, and not free. And Hungary has moved in the last several years from free to partly free. And with respect to the press, we've seen the Fidesz party, which has been in power for most of that period, you know, really perfecting the use and abuse of market forces to take over media, and has really consolidated the media in pro-government hands and used that consolidation to extend its political power in the process. And I think this is an important point, that control of the press, attacks on the press take traditional forms, which is, you know, throwing journalists in jail. That's a tactic, for instance, in Turkey or in China. But it's also using market forces to erase whatever the remaining vestiges are of an independent press. And now those market forces are being exacerbated by the pressures brought on by COVID-19.
Let me now turn to my colleague, Jeffrey Young.
I think one of the major issues that confront journalists right now is the use of technology against journalism. What I mean by this is online surveillance of what journalists are doing, even tracking them by their mobile phones. There are countries where just walking out the door with your phone on and getting in your car and driving someplace, somebody is monitoring you. They are keeping track of where you are going and perhaps who you are meeting, etc. Tell me about Freedom House and your efforts to fight the adverse use of this technology.
Well, that's a very important point, Jeffrey. And as you say, the rise of these surveillance technologies, you know, make it very, very difficult for reporters to pursue their stories in an independent way without, you know, oversight from state authorities. One way that we've tracked this is through our Freedom of the Net report. I discussed our Freedom of the World Report, but we also have a corollary project, which we've been doing for about 10 years, called Freedom of the Net, which examines the way that all countries use technology to restrict freedoms. And what's been particularly interesting, there are different ways that regimes do this. One is, again, the traditional way, where, like in Vietnam, if you're a blogger that's been critical of the government, you might get thrown in jail. But you also have the ability to monitor journalists. And I think also you have the ability to really support favored journalists and really undermine the economic viability of independent journalists. And so you've seen, for instance, in a variety of different countries, governments withdrawing advertising from media organizations that don't toe the line. So the mechanisms of repression and restricting press freedom have gotten much more sophisticated, as your question implies.
I think there's also an issue of access, and this plays right into what you just said. And some people even bring this up here in the United States. They say, why aren't the journalists who go to the briefings, why aren't they more confrontational? Why don't they stand up and say, excuse me, Mr. President or Mr. Prime Minister, what you said is untrue. We know for a fact that X equals Y and it doesn't equal Z. Why did you just say that? And of course, we know that in almost any country, access is the vital essence of the press, because if they don't have access, they have nothing to report because they can't see it, they can't hear it. So we have an access issue, and access is being used as a weapon. I wanted to get your reflection on that.
Well, I certainly agree with you that access can be used as a weapon, but I also think journalists are a very resourceful group of people, and they can figure ways around government restrictions. I think it's very, very difficult, you know, even in a closed society like China, you know, to keep bad news from surfacing, that over the last 10 years, there has been, you know, a lot of reporting about, you know, corruption among the communist elite in China. There's been very good reporting by the Chinese abuse of the Uyghur minorities in Xinjiang province. You know, what's interesting to me is that journalists have really a lot of ways now to try to get information, and they're being forced by the trends that you identified to be more creative in the way they approach this.
You're listening to Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. Our guest who joins us via Skype is Michael Abramowitz, president of Freedom House. That's an organization based here in Washington dedicated to the expansion of freedom and democracy around the world. I'm Carol Castiel, along with senior TV analyst Jeffrey Young. We'll be back with more of our show in just a moment.
How will the coronavirus pandemic affect Russian President Vladimir Putin's plan to stay in power beyond 2024, the end of his current term? Two leading experts on Russia and U.S.-Russian relations talk with host Carol Castiel about how the pandemic is upending President Putin's domestic and international political aspirations. Listen this Saturday and Sunday on Encounter on The Voice of America.
We're discussing challenges to press freedom and democracy around the world as we commemorate World Press Freedom Day. And this is a reminder that our PCUSA podcast is available for free download on our website at voanews.com/PCUSA. You may also follow us on Twitter at Carol Castiel VOA or connect with us on Facebook. Well, here's a shout out to a valued Twitter fan, Chum Chanta from Cambodia. If you want to hear your name and home country on the air, once again, please like us and follow us on Twitter and Facebook at Carol Castiel VOA, or just send an old-fashioned email to pcusa@voanews.com. So, Michael, let me get back to you and let's follow up on maybe some potential bright spots. You know, we've seen protests in parts of the Middle East, like Iraq, Lebanon. Of course, we're seeing that in Algeria, and even Sudan recently had a revolution. Do you see any bright spots there, or perhaps you can mention any other countries?
Sure. No, I think it's a great question, and I think it's a very healthy reminder that we have to not be consistently negative. That experience shows us that the press is very resilient. It can rebound from even lengthy stints of repression when given the opportunity, and that the basic desire for access to honest facts about government is, you know, can't be extinguished. And it's really never too late to continue to advocate strongly for the rights of journalists. And I think, you know, I'm very heartened just by the courage of citizen journalists in China who really, you know, brave their lives to document and report on COVID-19's toll in spite of the government's heavy-handed censorship and silencing tactics. You mentioned Sudan, another country in Africa that I think has been a kind of a bright spot, if you will, has been Ethiopia. They've had a new prime minister in the last 2 years. He actually won the Nobel Prize this year or last year. And he's opened up the country. It was one of the most repressive countries in Africa for many years. It still has problems, but, you know, he's invited civil society back into the country, released political prisoners, and allowed more commentary by independent media outlets. So I think the point that you're making is completely right, that this is not just a negative thing, and that the press is surprisingly, maybe not surprisingly, is very resilient in the face of these kinds of repressive actions.
Well, I'd like to pick up on a point that my colleague made with respect to the United States. And of course, you know, Michael, the United States has been considered a leader in press freedom, one of the foremost defenders of democracy. But President Trump has shown a certain amount of disdain for what we call the mainstream press, calling it fake news. How has this attitude undermined U.S. credibility around the world in an arena for which we have been renowned, a vibrant free press?
Well, let me just first start by saying that I do think truth requires us to say that the United States has a very, very vibrant press still. If you just think about all the kinds of things that are said by the president, good and bad, ugly, the criticism, the praise in some quarters, you know, the hard accountability journalism about the administration, which has been very strong from newspapers like the Washington Post, the New York Times, and others. There is an incredible ability in my country to say what you want, to report on what you want, and to document, to play the role that Jefferson saw the press playing in our country, which is as an accountability function for democratic government. I mean, he said famously he'd rather have a, you know, the press, I'm paraphrasing here, but essentially he'd rather have a free press than almost anything else in terms of democratic institutions, because he saw that the free press is really crucial to that accountability function. That said, I think you've seen some negative trends over the last number of years. I wouldn't say that it started in the last 3 years, but it's certainly accelerated a really very harsh, what I think is, you know, relatively partisan attacks on the press that are really designed to really undermine the credibility of the press in the eyes of the American people. And there's a very specific political agenda behind those attacks. And I'm a former White House reporter. I'm used to the press being criticized. I think that kind of goes with the territory and people have to have a thick skin. But I think what we've seen in the last 2 or 3 years, you know, has gone beyond what I've been used to in my experience as a former journalist. And I think you do see some impact of this already overseas. Not this year, but in the previous year, as part of our Freedom of the Net study, we looked at the explosion of laws around the country, around the world rather, that are aimed at restricting the rights of journalists, restricting access to information in the name of combating fake news. And there's a reason that those laws are taking place, because I think countries feel emboldened to do what they probably want to do anyway, but I think they're feeling emboldened by the kind of rhetoric that we hear out of some of the leaders in Washington. And that's regrettable and sad to me.
Let me pick up on what you just said and add a little bit more on this, and that is the weaponization of social media. Once upon a time, when social media first opened up, it was supposed to be a social meeting place where you could talk to people, say hi, whatever, you know, trade recipes. I'm being simple, but that's the point. Now we have a highly politicized social media, and we have a social media that is filled with disinformation. We saw what happened in the 2016 election. We saw that there were foreign entities that created social media accounts and used what are called bots, robotic computers, to spread this disinformation. And it's specifically designed to undermine confidence in elections, confidence in a democratic system, many things. Let me hear what you say on this.
Well, you're not going to get disagreement from me on that. I think that that's a very valid point. The first thing that comes to mind is just how rapidly the environment around news has changed in the last, say, 10 to 12 years. So when I was a reporter covering the White House, just to give one example, you know, if I wrote a story that was on the front page of the paper or that was on the homepage of the website and someone didn't like the story, there'd be attacks, but it might come in the form of comments, right? There are 10 or 12 comments. Sometimes for some stories, it'd be a couple hundred comments. Now, you know, if you're a White House journalist or if you're covering the Kremlin, if you're covering Saudi, wherever you're covering, if you write something that goes against the grain of a certain political faction, it's very possible, indeed very likely, that you're going to get attacked in a very vicious way online in a way that may or may not be fair or accurate. And that is really, really debilitating to, I think, journalists' willingness to kind of, you know, press their reporting in a very strong way. I mean, I think it's a credit to journalists that they're able to do their jobs under this kind of withering environment that you're outlining. I remember reading about the Saudi journalist Jamal Khashoggi, who was murdered, obviously, by the Saudi authorities in Turkey more than a year ago. And in the months before Khashoggi was murdered, he was the victim of just a vicious coordinated online attacks by the Saudi authorities and their allies that were really aimed at, in a very vicious way, at him personally. And it was very debilitating to him emotionally. And he found it very hard, according to the story about him, you know, to really deal with it. And I think you have to think about this happening all over the world to many journalists around. So I think journalists today have to have very, very thick skin, because they're really going to come under vicious attack for the reasons that you outline in certain cases.
something that is in your latest recommendations for democracies that struck me that I wanted to bring up is this one. Require social media companies to report foreign efforts to spread online disinformation and propaganda. Critically important.
Well, I think the point that we've been trying to make to stress is that there's a lot that we can do in terms of transparency. The issue of how do you deal with this disinformation is very complicated, and you want to make sure that in some ways the cure is not worse than the underlying condition. You don't want to be so aggressive in trying to police this speech that you crowd out, you know, legitimate political speech and freedom of expression. So a very complicated balancing act that's going on here. But I think one point that we make is that one thing the platform companies can be is very transparent about, you know, labeling content, about making sure that people know who is behind this content. If it's a foreign media source, to make clear that it's coming from a source that's associated with a foreign government. I think there's just a lot we can do to make the internet more transparent. And that would be very healthy, I think.
Michael, let me get a question in for you. Speaking of disinformation, how worried are you about China's increasingly aggressive propaganda efforts? According to one of Freedom House's reports, quote, over the past decade, top Communist Party officials have overseen a dramatic expansion in efforts to shape media content and narratives around the world, affecting every region and in multiple languages.
Yes. That's really an important point. We actually did a major study on that very subject a few months ago that came out, which is really the basic point is that the Chinese government, particularly the Chinese Communist Party and its proxies, you know, are rapidly expanding their influence over media production and the dissemination of media abroad. And so it's really trying not only to, you know, censor views and media inside the country, which we kind of expect them to do, the so-called Great Chinese Foreign Wall, but it's also trying to enhance its ability to interfere aggressively in other countries. And so there's a number of strategies that they pursue. You know, one of them is that, you know, they manage their own content delivery systems, whether it's Chinese broadcast outlets that are existing in other countries, you know, whether it's the kind of inserts that you get sometimes if you get the Washington Post or other American newspapers. These are sponsored by the Chinese government, these inserts. So, these efforts are quite interesting and quite concerning, really, and they really could have a potentially negative impact for years to come unless they're checked.
I suppose we just have to be aware of that, and people around the world need to know that when they're listening to something that's coming from China, that they have to be very skeptical as to the truth and integrity of those messages. And I guess Russian propaganda, Russian media is the same. We even have, I think, I'm not sure if RT, Russia Today, is still on the airwaves in the United States, but it's a pure propaganda channel.
Yeah, no, I think that's a very valid concern. And you have essentially propaganda being dressed up in kind of the dressing or the clothing of, you know, the traditionally, you know, impartial, you know, American approach to this of not all news organizations, but of many news organizations. So, yes, I think. The kind of the exercise of this kind of, you know, soft power both by Russia and China is of great concern. I think that, you know, one thing that we have to be careful about, again, is making sure that the cure is not worse than the actual bite. You know, it's interesting, you know, about a month or so ago, there was kind of this reciprocal action between the Chinese government and the U.S. government where the U.S. government booted out of America, you know, a number of people working for the Chinese news operations here. It was in response to some actions the Chinese had taken. And I think, you know, on one level, the action was, you know, completely justified in the sense of, you know, some of these people, you know, are not really true journalists in the sense of, you know, what you or I would consider a journalist. But that action was then followed up by the Chinese government booting out of China, you know, the American journalists who work for some of the major news organizations like the New York Times and the Washington Post. And that was really a significant action by the Chinese government in that it really deprived, you know, viewers around the world or readers around the world of some of the most important sources of impartial, accurate information about what's happening inside China. So this is a very complicated challenge to manage properly.
That's for sure. That's a very good point. Jeffrey?
Well, I think we also have a gaping problem right here in the United States. Who could forget the congressional testimony of Mark Zuckerberg, the head of Facebook, a few months back, when he was asked the question, if you are handed an advertisement that you know is patently false, would you still run it? And he just simply said, we don't make those judgments. If they pay for it, we run it. Now, with that kind of credibility tossed out the window and almost anything that someone pays for being put in front of the public, it's not just a matter of China doing these things. We can look right in our own neighborhood.
Yes. I think this goes to the point, Jeffrey, that these are very challenging and new situations for us, right? That I think, you know, when I was a journalist, we really didn't have these questions to worry about. And if a politician or someone else approached the Washington Post or CBS News with an advertisement, it was understood that, you know, that the news organization would have, you know, some leeway to reject ads that they felt were demonstrably untrue. But, you know, part of the question here is, you know, truth is oftentimes in the eyes of the beholder, and you also could really be worried about a situation in which unelected bureaucrats are making decisions about, you know, that affect many billions more people in terms of the reach of these platforms than the traditional newspapers have had. So it's a very challenging balancing act to strike.
And Michael, I'd like to close maybe hopefully on a higher or a more upbeat note and allow you to discuss the very specific tools and resources that Freedom House has at its disposal to achieve its important objectives of amplifying the voices of those struggling for freedom in repressive societies.
Well, thank you for that opportunity, and it's really been great to talk about these issues. I mean, the first thing that I would certainly say is that our website is fantastic, www.freedomhouse.org. And if you go to the website, you can get all the reports that we've done, Freedom of the World, Freedom of the Net. We've got other special reports, Freedom of the Media, Nations in Transit, which is a study of freedom in the former Soviet bloc. We just actually redid our whole website, and it's much more easy now to search for information that you want, to compare and contrast different countries. We've just started a new page on COVID-19 and the pandemic. So a lot of really great information tracking the infringement, not just of press freedom, but of all types of freedoms that are now taking place under cover of COVID-19. So the first thing I would say to your listeners is to really, you know, come to our website. We have an amazing amount of information about the state of freedom in the world. You know, Freedom House, in addition to doing research, we're also an advocacy organization and we're an operational organization. You know, we support human rights defenders, journalists, and others working around the world in the front lines of these countries in many different ways. And that work sometimes is quiet in certain places, and other places is more open. But we are both a think tank in some ways and a do tank in other ways. And, you know, we've been kicking for now close to 80 years, and we welcome supporters and we welcome people using our content. It's one of the most touching and meaningful things to me is meeting human rights defenders around the world when I was able to travel, who tell me how important our reports are to their ability to lobby their governments to make change. And that's really what we're trying to be after here at Freedom House.
Well, we'll certainly remind our listeners about your website. We'll make it available on our social media platforms. But we want to thank you so much for speaking with us. Michael Abramowitz is president of Freedom House, an organization dedicated to the expansion of freedom and democracy around the world. Michael, once again, thanks for sharing your insights with us in honor of World Press Freedom Day. We greatly appreciate it.
It's wonderful to be here, and just to say a shout out to VOA itself, which is also a beacon of information for the world. We appreciate it very much what you do at Freedom House.
Well, thank you so much. Press Conference USA on the Voice of America was produced in Washington with technical assistance from Gary Jaffe and Rick Pantaleo. And joining me on the program was VOA TV senior analyst Jeffrey Young. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Press Conference USA on the Voice of America.